What about Beulah's story?
Well, Beulah's story is the story of one of the reasons I wanted to have this story was a way of communicating some of my own experiences with learning about Sor Juana in our time. Beulah becomes a filter for seeing Sor Juana through our time. Because as I traveled and researched, and as we presented various readings in Mexico concerning Sor Juana, people would come up to us afterwards. I was with a Canadian theater company, and they would talk about when they first had their first encounter with Sor Juana, when they first heard her name, her first poetry that touched them. They all, especially women, had stories of what Sor Juana had meant to them. And of course, I had had the experience of having my life completely changed by this woman, and I thought it was remarkable the extent to which it would recur. This was just a recurring theme. And so I became really intrigued by what it was, getting at what it was that Sor Juana says to us in our time, why she changes lives the way she does. And so Beulah is one of those people who becomes increasingly absorbed by Sor Juana. Sor Juana supplies something for her, or she senses in Sor Juana an answer to a question perhaps she didn't even know she was asking. Sustenance for a hunger she may not even have realized she had. So Beulah then becomes this. It's not a parallel story, but they have very significant things in common. Beulah then is a young girl, quite brilliant, troubled, with a troubled family life. She is someone who is she has powerful needs and hungers. In a sense, we could say that all of her appetites are in disorder. And somehow Sor Juana is a kind of a guide for her. So her story is that at 17, 2 years early, she enters university. She's a very brilliant undergraduate student. She meets in her final year a married man. Her professor is thesis advisor is a professor of English and comparative literature. They have quite an improper and brief and very intense romantic encounter. And shortly after she enters graduate school, she disappears into Mexico. So the evidence then we have of her is a series of journal entries and writings from her travels in Mexico on the trail of Sor Juana. But the story is framed as a kind of a true crime story. The prologue of the book has this professor being in possession of her notes, her journals, her manuscripts. And so there's something of a mystery. How does he come into possession of these things? Why are the police interested in him? What happened on a particular night that is referred to in the prologue between them? Why that led to her being in hospital, for example. And so we have him working to sort through her notes. He seems to be looking through those notes to see if he is implicated somehow, if they have evidence of some improper conduct. And I think he's hoping to come to those answers, find that evidence before the police do.
Your book is full of references to myths, to Egyptian, Greek, Roman, Indian myths. You also say that that's in the book too. Anderson attempts to recast the myths. Is your book actually about the importance of myths?
I think that it's certainly about that. One of the things that it really emerged from the methodology, which is a kind of a crazy methodology. I wanted to follow the myths that Sor Juana herself was interested in. It struck me that there was something very revealing about the myths that she chose to work with. And at the same time, as I began that, I noticed that there were a number of myths some of the same, but some other myths that seemed, in a way, to be foreshadowing or paralleling or echoing in some way her own life. So there were the myths that Sor Juana was interested in, but then there also seemed to be the myths that were at work in her own life. Because you could argue that she was perhaps the most mythologized human mortal in history. During her time, she was called the Tenth Muse, the sum of the Ten Sibyls, Phoenix of America. There were a whole series of these epithets, and so in each case, just in the list of mythical references attached to her, you would have a program in mythology if you weren't careful. So I followed some of these myths, the ones that seemed most important, where they led. Partly out of a conviction that our time has lost touch with myth, and yet it is probably a constant. I don't believe there is a great deal of difference between the amount of mythology at work in one time or another. I just think that we're less aware of myths at work among us, and perhaps somewhat more vulnerable to them for being unaware of them.
Now, with all this knowledge in the book, you couldn't just sit down and say, I want to write a book and begin. How did you prepare yourself?
Well, I had thought that I was working on two very different kinds of projects. When I was in Mexico and first heard the name of Sor Juana, of course that began percolating for me. The more I heard about her, the more I wanted to know. At the same time, I was writing what I thought would become a series of short stories on the theme of hunger. I was very interested in hunger for what it could say about us, in a sense, because hunger operates on every level on which we are able to operate. There's hunger for food, hunger for love, for companionship, for sex, for connection. And so I had thought to do a series of these of stories on this theme. And I'd worked these two separate projects for about 2 years. And then all at once I had read something in Sor Juana's own writings, an autobiographical letter written in self-defense when she first started to come under pressure from the Inquisition, defending her right to study and so on. And she talked about a time in her teens when she was forbidden to read books. This is someone who'd been reading obsessively, compulsively, ravenously since she was three. And she was forbidden to read for a short time. And this was a very clear-minded person. But in her writing, even 25 years later, there was that sense of almost awe at the power of the experience. She said she felt the ballast or the anchor of her mind tearing free without anything for her mind to work on. It just began to feed on itself. And she felt this hunger for knowledge, she said, explode in her like gunpowder. And suddenly I saw this path, which had been on hunger, and this path, which had been on Sor Juana, and I thought they were divergent. I saw them converge. And all at once I saw, as though you're cresting a hill and seeing a prospect before you, I saw this enormous, complex, magical sort of book. And the first thing I thought was, in answer to your question, what on earth makes you think you could write that book? And the answer came to me very clearly, very quickly, nothing. I have no reason to believe I can do this. But I thought, you know, If I can do this, then it will mean that I will have become in the process a much better writer than I am now. So I said, I'll give myself 6 months of writing, 6 hours a day, and I will not reread a single line. I won't ask myself, is it good? How well is it going? What is it? I will just write for 6 months and never look. I've never looked at it, at that material. You couldn't pay me to look at it. But the characters begin, the voices begin to acquire their own character. The people in the story, you begin to do the backstory. You get a feeling for what kind of family life they would have had, what their past was like. So all of that was ready when I started to realize that now I have some chapters that are beginning to work.
You call your book a novel of the Baroque.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that I anticipated, and at least in this regard, I was right, is that a certain number of people would look at the structure of the book and the awareness in the book and say this is postmodernist. And the postmodern has a bit of an image problem. At the moment, it's not very popular even among us, and I'm actually not particularly sympathetic to the postmodern either, although I'm interested in some of the things that it can offer us as writers. I gave it the subtitle A Novel of the Baroque to signal to people that perhaps they could think again if they're assuming that this is postmodernist. This is something that has some similarities to postmodernism, but I was trying to suggest that, look again, it might be exactly what it says it is, Baroque.
Your book is not an easy read.
I've heard
what advice, I guess so. What advice can you give to first-time readers so that they can understand it more easily?
Well, I would readily give the advice I gave my mother, who was very anxious that she was going to let me down, that she would not be able to understand this book, and she was very proud of me and of course wanted to share in all of this, and I wanted her to be able to share in all of this. And I said, there is no test at the end. That I believed I had written a book that was very emotional. People have said it's a novel of ideas. I think it's a very emotional book about a woman who found ideas beautiful. And the great gamble of the book was simply that I could find a way to make those ideas mean something in human terms again, that they could be beautiful for us in some way or powerful. So I said, just follow your heart through the material. I tried to write a book that at least was not so concerned with its own subtleties that you wouldn't know what the characters were feeling. So I've always thought that the heart has its own intelligence. If I would have given a lot to be at the first public performance of Shakespeare's King Lear, and you're in the audience in the cheap seats with peasants, none of them who have PhDs, and yet I believe that they would have understood the most important and profound things that a story like King Lear has to offer. Without being able to write a PhD dissertation on the relationship between King Lear and the fool in the story, they would have sensed that there's something profound at work there, without necessarily being able to explain to you why. They would know that even the noble daughter, Cordelia, was perhaps a little bit too proud, even though what happened to her was far beyond anything she deserved. And I think that we don't give ourselves enough credit, and we tend to throw up barriers to these sorts of things when in fact we do understand.
Paul, thank you very much.
My pleasure.